Welcome to The Final Word, a Bible teaching ministry with pastor, teacher, and author Jim Andrews. The Final Word is grounded on the invincible conviction that what the Bible teaches, God teaches, and that is the last word. On this program, truth still matters. The Bible is in, Babel is out. The Final Word is funded by listeners like you. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about the program, please go to our website at thefinalwordradio.com. There you'll find archives so you can listen to any program you may have missed. Visit us on Facebook at The Final Word Radio and write us a note. We love hearing from our listeners. We'll provide other contact information at the end of the program, so have your pen ready. And now, Jim Andrews continues his study of God's Word.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us on The Final Word. We continue our exposition of Genesis. In our last program, we just barely penetrated that chapter, so let me read again the first several verses. And it came about after these things, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt offended their lord, the king of Egypt. God is in all of this. Pharaoh was furious with his two officials, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker. So he put them in confinement in the house of the captain of the bodyguard in jail. Providentially, that was the same place where Joseph was imprisoned. Don't you love it when a plan starts to come together, but Joseph had no idea? The captain of the bodyguard put Joseph in charge of them, and he took care of them. And they were in confinement for some time. Two of the king's officials, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker, somehow got sidewise with Pharaoh. They were then packed off to the royal prison. There they perhaps faced imminent execution. Let me talk a minute about the cupbearer. These officials typically had high standing in royal courts, and they enjoyed a close relationship with the monarch. Assassination by poisoning or attempts of that kind were very common in royal courts down through at least Roman times. Of course, the common source was tainted foods or drinks. So Pharaoh, like other kings, would have trusted food and drink tasters to test drinks and foods before he partook. Better them than he to die of poison. That was the unspoken rule. For some reason, Pharaoh found occasion to be angry with his chief cupbearer. Chief indicates there were evidently more than one of these officials in these two offices, and his chief baker. Well, who knows why? Maybe Pharaoh got food poisoning, or was led to assume that one of these two officials had allowed something harmful to get past them to him. It's not really that important. What is really happening is that in his providence, our sovereign God is orchestrating people and events in such a way that it is all going to lead to Joseph being rather suddenly released from prison and vaulted post-haste to the position of Grand Vizier of all of Egypt, second in command. A good lesson here. What we see, folks, is not necessarily all there is to see. There is the temporal play of events, and behind them may be a cosmic drama of which the temporal is only a small part. That is the big picture. The rest are just details. Details that contribute to the divine design, in this case, to elevate Joseph from the prison to the penthouse, literally. Don't we just love it when we see God's plan come together? How we delight in all the drama, all these twists and turns in between, all the tensions and conflicts, at last flowering into his perfect plan. However, if we were Joseph with boots on the ground at the time, I tell you, it would not have seemed so fascinating. Remember, his circumstances range from aggravating to agonizing, with no prospect of divine relief. But with God, we must ever remember to take one day at a time, take one step at a time, do the next right thing, leave things in his hands, not try to take them into our hands, and let God work all things, even the bad things, for good to them that love him and are called according to his eternal purposes. Certainly Joseph felt he was in the wrong place. He was a victim of great injustice and had been for a long time. since his brothers first tried to do him in and then elected just to sell him off to some Midianite traders who put him on the slave market in Egypt. He will try a little later to get the chief cupbearer to use his influence to spring Joseph from a miserable dungeon prison where, in all justice, he ought not to have been incarcerated. Life was very unfair to Joseph. He must have felt like many of us have felt at times. But the bald truth is that in the deeply sinful world that we live in, folks, life is not an equitable arrangement. It never has been, it never will be, until Christ returns and sets all things right and restores the Edenic order. Until then, by the grace of God, you and I, like Joseph, must deal with the hands that we are dealt in the providence of God, full of ups and downs, and things that go sideways, and not always our way. Joseph knew all about that in spades. But as it's about to turn out, unbeknownst to Joseph, God has put him, for all the pain and humiliation and injustice that he's endured, in exactly the right place. How ironic. It is something that you and I must observe and always remember about the sometimes painful and very circuitous ways of our sovereign God. They may seem messy to us, but there is an order in God's plan. Well, in verses 3 and 4, by God's providence, these two presumed offenders were tossed in the very prison house where Joseph was confined. They were promptly assigned to his care, in whatever way he was supposed to care for them. How long they were confined there, we don't know. All that we are told is that after they had been in custody for some time, weeks, months, years, we just don't know. But what we do know is that Joseph, when he was finally released, was 30 years old. That after the chief cupbearer was released, Joseph had to wait 2 more years, making him 28 when he interpreted these dreams that we're about to hear about. Beyond that, we just don't know how long Joseph himself was imprisoned. Came to Egypt when he was 17. One night after the two officials had been held there for some undefined time, both of them, this is God's work, in the same night, have divinely ordained dreams. Each one has its own meaning. We read in verse 5 that they both had a dream the same night, each man with his own dream, and each dream with its own interpretation. Well, verse 6, when Joseph came in to them one morning and observed them, behold, they were dejected. He was observant. He asked Pharaoh's officials, who were with him in confinement in his master's house, hey, why are your faces so sad, so dejected today? Well, they replied in verse 8, we've had a dream, and there's nobody to interpret it. Joseph said to them, do not interpretations belong to God? Tell it to me, please. Well, they were desperate. So the chief baker told his dream to Joseph and said to him, in my dream there was a vine in front of me, and on the vine were 3 branches. And as it was budding, its blossoms came out, and its clusters produced ripe grapes. Now Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, so I took the grapes and squeezed them into Pharaoh's cup, and I put the cup into Pharaoh's hand. In verse 12, Joseph said, interpreting the dream, this is the interpretation of it. The 3 branches represent 3 days. Within 3 more days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your office. And you will put Pharaoh's cup into his hand according to your former custom when you were his cupbearer. By the way, when that happens, will you just keep me in mind, verse 14, when it all goes well with you? Will you just please do me a kindness by mentioning me to Pharaoh and get me out of this place? For I was, in fact, kidnapped from the land of the Hebrews, and even here I've done nothing but they should put me in the dungeon. You can almost hear the chief cupbearer say, yeah, everybody's innocent. When the chief baker saw that he had interpreted favorably and said to Joseph, well, I also had my dream, and behold, there were 3 baskets of white bread on my head. In the top basket, there were some of all sorts of baked food for Pharaoh, and the birds were eating them out of the basket on my head. And Joseph answered and said, this is its interpretation. The three baskets are or represent 3 days. Within 3 more days, Pharaoh will lift up your head from you and will hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat your flesh off you. Oops. Betty wished he hadn't asked Joseph to interpret that. So, the next morning after those dreams, Joseph was making his rounds, checking on his fellow prisoners, found both dejected. Being a sensitive and compassionate man, Joseph naturally inquired about the reason for their long faces that morning. By culture, they were conditioned to believe in the significance of such dreams, especially so since both had had a dream the same night before, dreams of somewhat similar nature, structurally speaking. They were deeply bothered, and it was anxious to them, that there was nobody to interpret their dreams, the import of them, or they naturally believed in that culture that those dreams could be predictive of their future. Would they be prosperous or ominous omens, the dreams, I mean? Buried in prison cells, they naturally had reasons to worry that those dreams might be ominous. Joseph was quick to help. Notice he takes no credit, whatever for his ability to translate dreams. To God alone, he wisely ascribes the interpretation of dreams. Of course, he implies that his God will make those interpretations accessible to him. So tell me your dreams. In verses 9 through 11, the chief cupbearer is the first to relate the contents of his dream. That dream, Joseph confidently interprets for him, bottom line, you're going to be restored to your former position. In verses 14 and 15, he tells him that he will again stand before Pharaoh, and Joseph sees an opening, maybe to get himself released from prison, so he implores the chief cupbearer to just gratefully remember how Joseph had helped him, and since he had access, intimate access to the king, to make an appeal to the king in Joseph's behalf. All the more because Joseph protests his innocence of the charges that put him there. The fact that he doesn't deserve to be in prison. The fact is, he does not even belong in Egypt. He was forcibly taken there for no fault of his own. He was kidnapped, he says, and he's now in prison for no just reason. If anybody should be sympathetic to his plight, you would think it would be the chief cupbearer. But unfortunately, it has never been the general habit of the world's upper crust to look out for the oppressed and the underclass. They are better known for looking out for themselves. They're better known for forgetting those small people who, in one way or another, help them to arrive at the top of the heap. So not surprisingly, this guy used Joseph while he was down, but promptly forgot his service when he got back up. That's a good lesson to remember. It happens all the time. So he deserves no admiration whatever. But we're about to see God can use turkeys as well as eagles to accomplish his purposes. There will come a day when this man will helpfully, and I should add self-servingly, manage to remember Joseph in God's providence. Well, in verses 16 and 17, that positive interpretation of the chief cupbearer's dream emboldens the chief baker to relate his own dream. He's hoping, of course, for the same good result, since their dreams structurally had similarities. So in verses 18 and 19, with the same confident alacrity, Joseph unfolds the meaning of the chief baker's dream. But the interpretation was not what he hoped. It meant, unfortunately, that within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift off your head and impale your body on a pole, and the birds will eat away your flesh. Gruesome. But notice how Joseph, like a faithful prophet, told the poor man the truth, painful as it must have been. It would have been tempting, I'm guessing, to think of some way to soften it. But you don't mess with divine revelation. Remember that, folks. Well, in verses 20 and 22, we see that Joseph's interpretation, given by the Spirit of God, were right on. Thus it came about on the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast for all of his servants. And he lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer and the head of the chief baker among his servants. But the lifting up of the head had two different meanings. He restored the chief cupbearer to his office, and he put the cup in Pharaoh's hand. But, verse 22, he hanged the chief baker, just as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet, as we noted earlier, the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but he forgot him, flat out forgot him. Not surprising. So on the third day from the time of Joseph's interpretations on Pharaoh's birthday, there was a big bash staged in celebration of the event by the royal court. Whatever the reason for the timing, Pharaoh seized upon the occasion to lift up the heads of those two incarcerated officials, but as I said, in different senses. In the case of the chief cupbearer, he set him free, restored his office, lifted up his chin, as it were. But in the case of the chief baker, he lifted up his head in the sense of lifting it up by the sword from his shoulders, and then, as an example to all, impaled his corpse on a pole as bird food. Well, verse 23, for all that, the chief cupbearer failed to remember Joseph for all of his good services to him, forgot all about him, was content to leave him rotting in the dungeon while he served the king. The height of selfishness, the height of narcissism and ingratitude is all about him. Despite all that bad character, however, God is sovereign, and that official is nothing but a divine chess piece for all of his lack of virtue, whom God will use to checkmate all the injustices Joseph has suffered. But God will do it in his good time. Joseph, naturally, as probably you and I would have done, was trying to work out his own salvation in that situation, and he did no wrong in the process. But this scenario brings to mind the truth that for all of our due diligence, God will do things his way and at his time, on his schedule, not ours. He'll always be there in time. He'll be there on the dime. There is another lesson here. Do our best, but then rest. God will work things out, maybe long after you and I have given out. If not on this temporal plane, then in eternity. But in the end, we win, and we win big. And along the way, we have his matchless help. Well, this brings us to Genesis 41. Joseph, who would have imagined, before Pharaoh. And it happened at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh has a dream. And behold, he's standing by the Nile. And lo, from the Nile there came up 7 cows, sleek and fat, and they grazed in the marsh grass. And behold, 7 other cows came up after them from the Nile. They were ugly and gaunt. They stood by the other cows on the bank of the Nile, and the ugly and gaunt cows, they ate up the 7 sleek cows and fat cows. And Pharaoh awoke. Then he falls asleep again. And behold, 7 ears of grain came up on a single stalk, plump and good. And behold, 7 ears, thin, scorched by the east wind, sprouted up after them. The thin ears swallowed up the 7 plump and full ears. Pharaoh awoke, and behold, it was a dream. It came about in the morning that his spirit was troubled. So he sent for all the magicians of Egypt, all of its wise men, and he told them his dreams. But there was no one who could interpret them to Pharaoh. Though it's not explicitly stated in the text, we know from the general context that this dream had God as its source. Actually, there were 2 dreams in sequence, both meaning the same thing, but coming to Pharaoh in 2 forms. This double dreaming was intended to reinforce the divine certainty of the predictions and the alacrity or the quickness with which the events will get underway. In the first form, Pharaoh was standing by the river Nile. Out of the river emerged 7 cows, sleek and fat, started grazing among the reeds. Immediately after them, he saw 7 other cows, ugly and gaunt, coming up out of the Nile, and they stood beside the previous fat cows and ate them up. After that, Pharaoh woke up. Then he falls asleep again, second dream of a similar nature. This time he saw 7 heads of grain, healthy, good, growing on a single stalk. Right after them, 7 other heads of grain sprouted. These were thin, scorched by the hot east wind. The thin head swallowed up the 7 full heads of grain. So again, Pharaoh wakes up. What had seemed so real, as sometimes our dreams do seem to us, he found to be only a dream. Nevertheless, his mind was deeply troubled. As mentioned previously, in those ancient cultures, dreams of such a nature were seen as sources of revelation, as omens of the future. Pharaoh, of course, just couldn't forget it. So he called upon all his royal resources. He was determined to get to the bottom of the mystery dreams. What could it possibly mean? His royal default mode was to send for all his intellectual class, those who were supposed to have the keys to all those kinds of things. Surely they'd be able to unravel such mysteries. These were the magicians and the wise men of his kingdom. Now, magicians in that part of the world were guilds of magicians maintained by the royal courts, whose task was to interpret signs and dreams and concoct remedies for various types of medical problems through these magical means. These specialists used exorcism to frighten away demons and gods, and incantations and curses to transmit evil from someone or some place. That's the Bible Background Commentary on the Old Testament, page 72. These were occult practitioners all the way. It's not clear how wise men were to be differentiated from the magician class, if in fact they were to be distinguished somehow. In any event, a pagan king here, Pharaoh, draws upon the best heathen wisdom he can find in his kingdom, but the interpretation of his dreams was totally elusive to them. No one could interpret them for him. Well, well, enter once again the chief cupbearer. All of a sudden, he recovers from his temporary amnesia. He remembers Joseph. I'm sure it helped his memory problem when a chance to ingratiate himself with his master presented itself. Funny how things like that work, isn't it? But his self-serving remembrance aside, it is all in the providence of God. This royal crisis presents a stage for the entry of a man that God has made for this very moment in the salvation history of God's chosen people. Chief cupbearer speaks up after everybody in Pharaoh's cabinet of powerful magicians and advisors is totally stumped. I would make mention today of my own offenses. Pharaoh was furious with his servants. He put me in confinement in the house of the captain of the bodyguard, both me and the chief baker. We had a dream the same night, he and I. Each of us dreamed according to the interpretation of his own dream. Now there was a Hebrew youth with us there. He was a servant of the captain of the bodyguard. We related our dreams to him. And you know what? He interpreted our dreams for us. To each one he interpreted according to his dream. And it came about, Your Majesty, that just as he interpreted it for us, that's the way it happened. Pharaoh restored me to my office, and he hanged him. That got the attention of Pharaoh. So having exhausted all of his options, Pharaoh had heard all he needed to hear. He quickly dispatched servants to bring Joseph from the dungeon. Desperate times require desperate measures, and that's where Pharaoh was. He didn't care if he'd been in a gutter. Go get him. Bring him here. Where he had been was worse than a prison as we think of them. It was a dungeon. There Joseph had been held evidently for some years. But despite all of his affliction over those years, his vigorous faith had not failed Joseph in the least. That was the work of God, as we're about to see. But he could not come into the royal presence looking like a sewer rat. To appear in such an august presence as Pharaoh, appearance-wise, Joseph needed to be glamour-treated, to be ready for prime time. So Pharaoh's courtiers made sure he was shaved bald, in Egyptian style, and given a change of clothes suitable for the presence of majesty. By the way, that makeover and proper outfitting of Joseph for appearance before human majesty surely ought to suggest to us that there may be something untoward about us appearing for worship in the presence of God in ways that I would hope we would never think of presenting our persons in the Oval Office or at Buckingham Palace. Some would, of course, but that just tells a story about their crude lack of sensibility to higher things that call them to be at their best. I know my dad, a blue-collar man, always suited up when going to church. He explained that he just felt he ought to be at his best when he came into the presence of God. That sense of sacred ground is virtually absent today. Well, dear friends, thank you for joining us on The Final Word. God bless you, and have a good day.
The Final Word is a listener-supported ministry. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about this program, please visit our website at thefinalwordradio.com. Our postal address is The Final Word, 4565 Carmen Drive, Lake Oswego, Oregon, 97035. Our email address is info@thefinalwordradio.com. And our phone number is 503-699-9840. If this program is ministered to you, tell a friend about it. We do solicit your prayers for God's hand upon this outreach.